Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things Manchester United. I'm your host, Nick, and pleased to be joined tonight by Ali Woods. Say hello, Ali.
Hello, listeners. How are you doing? Thanks for having me back on, Nick. I thought I might be a one-appearance man, but here we are making my second appearance on United Hour, so the pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
Definitely past that kind of one cap stage.
That David Nugent. I've gone from the David Nugent one cap, and so now we're into good territory. Multiples.
Exactly.
I like it.
Exactly. I'm sure. Yeah, our regular listeners will remember that Ali joined us a couple of months ago. You were just actually heading off to Barcelona, I remember you were promoting the kind of comedy gig you were going to be doing out there, and you were going to be going to the match. And you know, it ended up being one of our highlights of the season, I guess. I mean,
Well, I mean, that seems like a lifetime ago now. It seems like a different team I'm watching now, even though, what would that have been like 3 months ago? That was a cracking game, 2-2 at Camp Nou. It's not often you go to Camp Nou and see your team sort of, for large periods of the game, sort of outplay Barcelona, and it's not a terrible Barcelona team either. I mean, they're flying high in La Liga. So, yeah, it was a wicked experience. Unfortunately, more recently, I went away to Seville and got to witness the 3-0 loss at the Estadio de Dragao, or whatever it's called. It was not fun.
Yeah, it's all right. You've had the rough with the smooth. But yeah, that Barcelona, it was mid-February when we were rolling on. Well, we said this at the time we went through them. It's crazy that we beat Barcelona, who were top of La Liga champions. We beat Real Betis, who were like fifth, sixth at the time. And we go out to Sevilla, who were 12th mid kind of table. Mm. But Sevilla do have some kind of bizarre hoodoo in this tournament. I saw doing well against Juventus the other day. They definitely sold the soul of Sevilla to the Europa League gods at some point in the past few years.
It's their destiny. I think they might have set it up. I'm pretty sure Sevilla set up the Europa League. I'm not sure who did it. I don't think UEFA know it's happening, but they've set it up to win it every year. So that's, it's unfortunate. We just ran out of Spanish teams to play. For some reason, we had to play every single Spanish team in the Europa League before we allowed, and we eventually got knocked out by Seville. But moving on, I guess.
Well, that was the killer. I mean, look, on this show, we are going to talk about the recent form. We did not manage to record last week, so it's actually been three matches since we last recorded. A good win against Wolves, two bad losses on the road to Brighton and West Ham. I was at that Brighton game away, which was an absolute killer. Latest goal ever conceded in the Premier League. To be there made it even worse, kind of ruined what was a great kind of day out in Brighton that day. So we will talk about those matches. We will also have a good focus on what's going on with the women's team. Both of us were at Wembley yesterday for the Women's FA Cup final, and the Women's Super League is coming to a big kind of end with some massive doubleheader next weekend. And then we'll probably round off with a few bits and bobs about the ownership, which is still dragging on every week. We hope for kind of like big breaking news coming, but it's still kind of going over there. But look, let's start with what's going on with the men's team. As I said, there has been three matches since we last recorded. The Wolves game was the most recent on Saturday. We are recording this on Monday night. The big chat is still the kind of top four race. We are, as we're recording, Liverpool are winning. I just saw they've gone up to 3-0. So, they will come back to kind of 1 point right behind us. We do have that game in hand. So it has been a kind of running chat on our pod here for the last few weeks. It all started, when we were beating Tottenham and it ended up 2-2. And then a couple of our guys, specifically Imran and Jamie, started getting very worried about Liverpool's form, that we were starting to look tired. We're saying, oh my God, the worst case is coming to happen. I particularly have said, look, I'm chilled about this. We've got enough of a gap. We're going to be okay. Then, you know, we've had a mixed bag of results since then. And it's basically been, yeah, our home form is good. We beat Aston Villa. We've beaten Wolves. Our away form is awful. And, you know, these two losses in a week, West Ham and Brighton, really got people like questioning again. I mean, have you been kind of worried about this, or do you think we're good enough and like feel quite chilled about where we're finishing in top four?
Well, I will say two states of mind, either side of the Wolves game, right? Liverpool are just infuriating. They won't go away. And yeah, I think they're literally going to win their last nine games on the bounce, which I don't think anyone saw coming considering how rubbish they've been this season. So yeah, when we lost, I was at the West Ham game as well. And when we lost that game, I will say with the Brighton and West Ham results, I don't think we deserve no points from either of those games. I thought Brighton looked very good in midfield as they normally do, but didn't create loads. I think we had the better chances in that game. West Ham is individual errors. So I think that was a bit reassuring in terms of hoping top four in that. It wasn't like we were turning up at these teams and getting played off the pitch and De Gea was making seven saves and we were just lucky to get beat 1-0. It was actually that they looked leggy. We just weren't getting like the rub of the green in terms of the ball bounces. Some refereeing decisions potentially could have come into play. I mean, that's all systemic when you're an okay team. You know that when you're an okay team, you care more about the rub of the green and the referee. When you're a great team, you think City are sitting here talking about, oh, have the ref made more decisions? No, they just go and smash teams. So I was sort of had that hope that, you know, our home form is different. Going into the Wolves game, I was just hoping. And then in the first sort of 20 minutes, when we just still looked so leggy, I thought, oh God, maybe this is just it. And with Rashford out for that game. But now we're beating Wolves, and Wolves look like they're on the beach. We've got three other games. Exactly the type of opposition you want to play at this time.
Yeah.
Mid-table dross, you know, these mid-table teams that don't really have anything to play for, you know, like your Bournemouths, your Chelsea's, you know, just mid-table rubbish teams like that.
Yeah.
So we should be okay, I think. I mean, if we go to Bournemouth and lose, which could happen because apparently away from home they stopped knowing how to play, then the concern comes right back. But You take it at this point. I said to my friends, like, you take it at this point, you'd be 1 point ahead of Liverpool with a game in hand and only three games of the season left, playing two of those games at home, not playing anyone in the top half of the table. I mean, come on, we should. If we lose it from here, then we don't deserve it. We're now, it's the first time we had a week break between a game, not even a week, 6 days since September. So they should start to be coming back. And to be honest, the Wolves game again, we should have won that 3-0 or 4-0. So I was a bit encouraged by that. I don't expect Bournemouth and I don't expect Fulham are going to be too up for it. I imagine they'll start rotating players and just having a good time. Chelsea are a wild card because they've got the quality of players that could damage us. And I do expect Liverpool to obviously smash Southampton. But I also think Villa have still got a lot to play for. Their next game, it'll be at Anfield, but you know, I could see Emery doing a nice defensive job on them, counter-attacking job with them. That's not the type of team you want to be playing at this time of the season. Team with lots to play for. They've just beaten Spurs. They'll be going into that game with confidence, with a strategy. So hoping maybe they'll take a couple of points off Liverpool. So now we've beaten Wolves. I think it's comfortable. I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, and as I said, I felt pretty okay. I thought our home form would see us over the line, even though our away form is wobbly. As I said, you were at West Ham, I was at Brighton. They are killer defeats. But yeah, I thought, you know, we deserve to beat Brighton. It's just been our finishing, which has been a problem. You know, if Rashford isn't scoring, then who is scoring is our big issue. And yeah, if you look at things like the XG expected goals, you know, if you take away Brighton's last minute penalty, then basically it was an even game. So we deserved a point there. West Ham, again, we started better. We had a lot of chances in the early part. And then, yeah, an absolute awful mistake from David De Gea just puts us behind, puts everybody on the back foot. You see that bit of nervousness creeping. Gives all the kind of confidence to West Ham. And that was the only disappointment in that West Ham game, was that after we went one down, we didn't really see enough of a comeback. You know, you can have those kind of mess ups, but you want to see a bit more from the team to come back into it. And yeah, on that day, the XG at 1.8 for West Ham, 1.1 for us, shows that they did actually deserve the win. So it was more disappointing than even that Brighton one. But as you say, I did think it's that accumulation of games, tired legs, a few injuries. Now that we had had a week off, we managed to beat Wolves with relative ease, not even really getting out of top gear. You know, XG for the Wolves game puts us at 3.1 and them at like 0.2 or something. So yeah, it should have been even easier than that. But yeah, without Rashford, to get those goals, to get that win, does give you a bit of confidence for going into this last run. Because yeah, we're not sure at the moment how long he's going to be out for. And that is the only slight worry on it. It was great to get Varane back in the team. He's definitely somebody we've missed. And if we can get, you know, him fully fit for that kind of cup final, it's going to make the big difference over there. So we've got a couple of weeks and yeah, get Rashford back in. You know, that's been the main kind of worries for me in this little run has been as soon as we lost Martinez, as soon as he lost Varane, you start having to play Luke Shaw centre-back. Malacia comes in and he does a decent job, but it's a big kind of step down from Luke Shaw playing left-back. So yeah, to get Shaw back in his good position, Varane in there, you know, you see a bit stronger in that Wolves game over there. And hopefully, as I say, we now have a week off till that Bournemouth game. And let's try and break that away hoodoo and get back on it. I mean, there has actually been the point being made that our away form, apart from playing the best teams, is not that awful. I think we're about fifth or sixth in the away table overall this season. So we have picked up quite a few away points against the kind of bottom half. Mm. It's only been against the kind of top teams where we've really struggled.
Hopefully it'll be like that Forest game where we sort of went into that a little bit, not in the best form. We just sort of comfortably beat them 2-0, should have been more really. Hopefully it'll be more like that. I mean, they are capable, this team. And we've seen with Ten Hag, he's able to get them often going at times when we might be a bit more under pressure. I mean, in those big games where we've lost, you know, Liverpool, City, Sevilla, they seem like they completely lose their heads, and there's no reason to completely lose your head against someone like Bournemouth. And now also, I remember saying to my friend about injuries at one point in the season, he's like, oh, we got Garnacho out. And he was like, oh yeah, Garnacho, he makes a big difference, doesn't he? But he does. Like, having a player like that come off the bench who is electric, gets the crowd going, is direct, has the skill, the quality to run at tired legs, it's huge. I mean, he's come on and been brilliant a number of times this season. He's got the most goals and assists out of any sub in the Premier League. So I think that, again, as we saw at Wolves, just adds to our getting stronger at the end of games. Because what we were seeing against Brighton and West Ham was in the last 20 minutes, we were nowhere. We were just trying to hoof the ball up, trying to get rid of it. No one wanted it. No one was making runs. So I think having him back as well was a huge boost. And yeah, as you say, Varane coming back to play centre, I thought he was okay against Wolves. I thought he was great in the air and his positioning was good. But I think he did a couple of weird stuff. He gave away a couple of weird corners and stuff. But I think he's just coming back in.
Well, that's it. A little bit rusty. Yeah, hope. Yeah. And that's it. He's got a couple of weeks now as we're getting towards that cup final to hit full fitness. Yeah. And, you know, we can have a bit of a chat about that later. But yeah, I'm hoping if we can get him and players like that, then can give us a big chance in that cup final.
Mm. And Shaw moving to left back just helps us progress the ball so much better. Like, as you said, Malacia, even Dalot when he was playing there, they deputise okay, but Shaw's so good at bringing that ball up, getting those passes in into the forwards. I mean, that dinked cross he does for Anthony, which is just a header out from 4 yards that he completely balloons over. You're just not going to get that from Malacia at left back. So that attacking option is great as well.
Definitely, definitely. And yeah, Shaw's done a good job filling in at centre-back, but you definitely miss him on that left side. And I absolutely agree with you. Garnacho is a big player. To have him coming back is a big boost for the end of this season as well. He is that perfect impact sub. It's what we often miss. You know, often we're bringing in Sancho, Weghorst from the bench and you're like, are they really going to be the ones who are going to make the difference? Whereas, you know, Garnacho again and again is making that difference late in games. Also, yeah, giving a good option on the left side if somebody like Rashford is out. Mm. Brilliant. We said on the last show that he's signed a new contract. I mean, he looks like an absolute star to me. Not sure about his haircuts. Maybe he needs to sort that out.
Sorted his teeth out, though. He's got a nice set of chompers now.
Definitely spent his new contract money on some dental work.
He's just looking at the Ronaldo framework and gone, right, what did he have? He had bleached blonde, sort of fluffy hair at the top. He got his teeth done. He's on that progression. So I respect the game in that way. But yeah, our forwards in general, though, need to have a look at themselves. I mean, like, honestly, the last few games, just so many of them adding nothing. They're not scoring. They're not even shooting. They're not taking on players. They're not holding the ball up. They're not pressing. And you just think, what are you doing? I mean, Rashford's up there trying on his own. Antony, to be fair to him, he tries and he works hard, but he struggles with providing the correct quality in the final third. But players like Sancho and Martial, I mean, I know Martial got the goal from a sort of tap-in that was on a play for him, but these are top players we know are capable of top performances, but they just don't seem to add anything. I mean, against West Ham, just to watch them all sort of like jogging around and, oh, it's so annoying. It's so irritating.
Well, yeah, I think it was that West Ham game where I think Weghorst started that one, didn't he? And Martial came off the bench.
And Bruno Fernandes at left wing.
Yeah, which I never like to see. I think, we, like I said, Ten Hag's done a brilliant job this season. We're really happy with him. But there has been a few decisions lately where there is a few question marks. You know, sometimes Rashford is playing out of position. Bruno's playing out of position. And you're like, look, let's get Rashford back on the left. Let's get Bruno back at number 10. And even though Martial has not been in the best of form, for me, he has to start over Weghorst every time. Even like, you know, a 75% Martial is offering more than Weghorst most of the time. But apart from maybe in that West Ham game where he came on and did very little, unfortunately. But yeah, he did show in this game that he can get that goal. He did even have one run, Martial, in that West Ham game. I remember where he shows what he can do. He went past a couple of players. It was the one kind of chance that we could have got back into it where, you know, he didn't do a lot, but just showed that something where, you know, you're never really going to get that from Weghorst. I mean, to be fair to Weghorst, when he came on, he did actually make a great ball that ended up coming into the goal that we scored late on over there. So yeah, there is, can still contribute himself. But yeah, our forwards is the problem. We've said on this podcast time and time again, it's the number one issue for us is up front. We know, obviously, Ronaldo left. Martial's only half fit. Thankfully, Rashford has massively stepped up this season and made up for it. But, you know, it's going to be top of our kind of transfer list is going to be the forward position for sure.
Well, did you see... Did you see, not even one. Yeah, did you see that list of the expected goals, two goals scored of all the teams so far in the season? And first you got Arsenal and second City. And we're 16th. So that Wolves game was actually 16th versus 17th in terms of how potent their forward line is. That's why it wasn't the best attacking display to watch. But we're so far behind. I mean, you see Spurs up there at third. And you think so much of that is down to Harry Kane. And it is sort of tempting to think, well, if you put him in our team, then how much better he'd make us. But you never know. I suppose that's for the transfer market to decide.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, the XG, obviously, our expected goals is much higher. I mean, on Antony specifically, I had been looking at his numbers. So he's hit 8 goals, 3 assists for us. If you look at his specific kind of expected goals and assists, he should be more like hitting 16. I think even more like around 20. For a player like that, the amount of chances he's had, the amount of kind of opportunities he's had to on assist side, he should be hitting 20 kind of goals and assists for a season. I mean, I think he's had an okay season. There's obviously a higher expectation on him because of the amount of money he's cost. I think we can all admit he was not worth that much. And he's probably like a kind of 40, 50 million pound player that we've ended up paying more like 80, 90 million for. But hopefully next season he can push on, you know, for players coming in from the Dutch leagues, you can't assess them straight off on that one first kind of year over there, and hopefully he can make a forward move on from it next season. He does at least give you that hard work on the right side, always battling. He's that right kind of character. It's just sometimes his decision making is off. He's often taking shots when maybe the pass would be better and not always the right quality. I mean, yeah, like in this Wolves game, he should have had a couple of goals early on that would have sealed it all for us. I mean, he did eventually get the assist for Martial to see us starting this game. So yeah, it's not totally awful, but yeah, he's just not really hitting enough for the amount of chances he's getting.
Yeah, Antony is the infuriating nanny type player, because you know he has something about him. You know he has quality, like the way he receives the ball, the way he can dribble, the way he can let off a shot sometimes. Some of the goals he scored against City, Real Betis, they're absolute bangers, you know. But, and that's why it's annoying when he's like, someone like Weghorst is not annoying because he's just sort of useless. He's just not up to the standard.
You know, he's doing as well as he can.
He's trying, he bless him, he's trying to move those tree trunk legs as quick as he bloody can. But someone like Antony is infuriating. You sort of hope he kicks on next year. I think, yeah, that we'll see. I think what the good thing about Antony you can say is that we definitely become worse when he comes off the pitch. And that has happened across a lot of games. You know, when he comes off, the balance of the team loses. He can play that right side. He can play Ten Hag's system well. He puts in a lot of work. And look, the transfer fee is not his fault, but transfer fee or whatever, if you're playing starting every week as a winger for Man United, you need to be hitting double figures, goals and assists. You just need to. You can't be there tracking back your left back. You need to be absolutely potent in the final third. And we look at the sort of players that you need to compete with in that sort of Liverpool side. The City side, they have a varying changes. They've spent so much money, got so many players. But that Liverpool side that was almost all conquering, Salah, Mane and Firmino, they all did it all, really. You know, they all pressed off the ball. They all created chances. They all scored chances. And you look at our front line, it's only really Rashford that's at that level now. So Anthony needs to step up. You hope he can. Ahmad, you maybe think might come back and maybe start challenging him for that position. And then you hope we can get in a new striker who is of that quality.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And yeah, we will talk on future pods about the transfer window and who might come in. We will take a quick break there, come back and talk about what's going on with the women's team.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Back for part two of the podcast. So yeah, look, as we said, the men's team did get back on track with 3 points against Wolves. We're now 1 point ahead of Liverpool with a game in hand. And yeah, me and I mean Ali, we're relatively confident about our top four hopes. We didn't manage to get Jamie or Imran on this podcast. They may join us next week and we'll see where we're at then.
Yeah, when we've had another 1-0 like loss to Bournemouth with Billings just side-foot it in, then they might be back.
Well, I will say, I mean, you said over there, nobody would have predicted Liverpool go on this run. But actually, I know that Imran said Liverpool are going to win all the rest of their games about 4 games ago. So he had kind of said this and he said, oh, it's going to go to the last week of the season. But I think even he thinks that we will do just about enough. But it's just kind of that worrying thing that itches away at you every kind of game going there. But yeah, look, let's look at what's going on with Manchester United women, who look of having a historic season, definitely the best season they've had in their history, short history. We're only in kind of year five of Man United women. I mean, yeah, I and you were both at Wembley yesterday for the Women's Cup final. A great day, like for historic day for women's football again, a full Wembley for a women's match. I mean, I know a friend of mine went to the Women's Cup final, I think he said about 3 or 4 years just before COVID, and he said it was kind of about a third full. There was maybe like 25,000-30,000 people there. They didn't even open the whole stadium. Whereas this was a complete sellout. I had tickets more in the kind of neutral actual area. You said you were in the United area right?
Yeah, the United end, the designated women's football Stretford end of London. I was there. It was my third women's football game I've been to. First was ages ago in the 2012 Olympics. Another one last year, I told you just before we started, but my partner is a Chelsea fan, unfortunately, even though she's Irish. Which is rich coming from me, a Cockney Reds, but you got to, the point of being a football fan is to be shameless, right? So we went to Chelsea Women's, Man United Women's last year, and that was the title decider where Chelsea needed to win to make sure Arsenal didn't win the title. I mean, United were going to finish fourth. So it was nice to see a direct comparison a year on, and there were similarities in a way because in that game, the first game a year ago, United went 2-1 up. They're playing some nice stuff in the first half. Second half, Chelsea just came rushing on and brought on subs and end up winning the game 4-2. And it was similar this time around, but I think a lot closer. I think you've got to say I was not expecting the quality with which United women would be passing the ball around against that Chelsea team. You know, this is a Chelsea team that are up for there for one of the best teams in the world, let alone the domestically. And I feel we just completely outplayed them in the first half. Brilliant flowing football, playing out the back. The centre-backs were brilliant. And it was, you know, they've been obviously watching the men's because the strikers just couldn't provide that final bit of quality. Should have had Martial playing, but I think Veghorst would have fit in well. But they just couldn't do it. And the problem is when you're playing these sides, I mean, you know, Chelsea could bring on players like, what's her name? Pernille Harder?
Harder.
I was thinking of the ice cream there. Sorry, I'm just hungry. But yeah, I mean, that's the issue, is that we just didn't have those types of players to bring off the bench. And, you know, the goal itself was, I mean, it was real quality in terms of its finishing, but it's a shame to sort of lose the ball in midfield like that and to make it quite easy at the end. But we just didn't have enough, unfortunately. But it was great to see. Yeah, I was really, really impressed with how well they played. I thought it was going to be one where we were sort of looking to try and nick something, sit back and try and counter on Chelsea, but completely took the game to them. It's just unfortunate because it just feels like an inferiority thing, you know? And similar to, I was at the Newcastle and Man United Carabao Cup, and I'm sure that's maybe how Newcastle fans felt. They felt that they did well on the ball and all that. I don't think they created nearly as many chances as the United women did against Chelsea yesterday. But ultimately, this Chelsea team, they've been there, done that. And it's no shame to sort of lose 1-0 with Sam Kerr, who's going to probably go down as one of the best ever women's players. To get a goal and take down. Hopefully they learn from it. Hopefully they can hold on to quite a few of their top players. But yeah, I was very impressed. I don't know what you thought, Nick, but I was very impressed.
Yeah, I enjoyed the day. I took my daughter, who's just kind of been getting into football. She's been to about 4 or 5 live matches now. This was actually, unfortunately, a harsh reality lesson for her, because every time she's been before, either been watching Manchester United or England Lionesses, we have won. It was the first time she'd ever seen her team lose. And I think she hadn't really realised that was an option until yesterday, unfortunately. So there was quite a few tears when first the Chelsea goal went in and at the full-time whistle. But yeah, I think now she'll still say she enjoyed the day and it was a great day out. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of... I think there's a kind of family atmosphere at these games. Of course, it's very different to going to like the men's games. You said you were at Wembley for that Newcastle game final, as I was as well. And it's a different atmosphere. But yeah, it's a lot of people bringing children there, introducing them to there. But yeah, I think the level of football is better as well than people give credit for. You know, there's still a lot of kind of comments and criticism of women's football. This season, it's come on massively, you know, being showed on the BBC. Obviously, the Lionesses won last summer, so there's been a lot more interest. And yeah, personally, I think it's great to see. I totally agree with you on the comments in general about kind of Chelsea. They are the kind of women's juggernaut. You know, they've won several titles. This is their third FA Cup in a row. And Sam Kerr has scored at Wembley in the FA Cup final 3 years in a row. Wow. She's a kind of women's player of the year.
Decent return, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she's that kind of annoying player. So she was given like player of the match. I don't think she did a lot apart from scoring that goal. Yeah.
It's classic results punditry there. Someone who's looked over, who scored? Sam Kerr, what brilliant player. Like you see them do it all the time, pundits on TV, where a team can be really bad and then sneak a 1-0 win and they can just go, yeah, but they were just resolute. They just grinded it out and it's a sign of a good team when they're, and it's like, no, they were lucky. You're allowed to go. And it's the same with Sam Kerr. Like, I'm not sure who would have got player of the match because, you know, it was a quite tightly contested, but I'm sure there were better Chelsea players, maybe in defence, or even the keeper made a couple of cracking saves.
Yeah.
Put herself on the line at the end there when there was a big scramble just 6 yards out. So, yeah, they could have got it. But, yes, I'm not sure why she got it. But it's just pundits having a quick look at BBC Sport Football and just going, yeah, Sam Kerr, player of the match. Well done.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, look, she is an outstanding finisher. And that's it. She will punish you. We had more chances, as you say. I'd say that, yeah, we had definitely the better of the first half. We started very well. there was that early goal that was chalked off. Mate. You know, one of those horrible ones. You celebrate, you think you've done great, and all of a sudden VAR chalks it off. I mean, yeah, I think it was the correct decision. Unfortunately, Ella Toon was kind of offside before she passes it in to Leah Galton, who put it away. But yeah, there was a couple of other chances Galton had as well, could have scored. Fortunately not. Again, the XG was actually in our favour, 1.7 for Manchester United versus 1.1 for Chelsea. But they are that team who just, like you say, they are a much better organised team. They will kill you on any of those mistakes. They will happily sit back, soak it up and just try and hit you. And they've done it to us before. They have that experience. Their manager as well, Emma Hayes, has won several of these. I think she has that bit more kind of tactical nous than maybe our manager, Skinner, Mark Skinner, who's just kind of the first time he's in these kind of positions. They've made a couple of subs. Like you said, when Harder came on, that kind of changed that game for them in that second half. You could see they had a couple of chances just before scoring as well. You felt that goal was kind of coming, whereas I don't think our changes that came on really helped us that much or made that much difference. There was a bit of hard work from a couple of the subs, but yeah, you were looking for maybe the likes of the big names, Ella Toon, Alicia Russo, to maybe step up a bit and do something. There wasn't quite enough from them. You know, they were the ones who've done it for England Lionesses and won things before at Wembley, and I was hoping to see a bit more from both of them. And it wasn't really quite enough. But you say, it's a brilliant experience. First time ever our women have reached Wembley, first kind of domestic cup final for all of them, and a lot of players playing in a big match like that for the first time. So hopefully they can learn from it, go on to bigger things next season. There is massive games coming up in the Women's Super League next weekend. Chelsea have a game in hand that they're playing on Wednesday night against West Ham. Don't hold much hope of West Ham getting anything there. If there was a shock, it would be brilliant, but the one chance is next weekend. Chelsea are playing Arsenal, and it's the Manchester derby, Man United versus Man City, both on Sunday. It's essentially going to be the day where the Women's Super League is probably decided. Yep. At the moment, we, Manchester United women, are top of the league. But yeah, if Chelsea get those points midweek, they will go top. And if they see out these last couple of games. But yeah, Arsenal are our hope.
Oh, man, that sentence never goes well. That sentence never goes well, Nick.
Arsenal are our hope,
You know what? In the brief times, you know when you've ever needed Arsenal to get a result? The brief times when I've been an Arsenal fan and had to watch an Arsenal game, like trying to see them beat City or Chelsea or whoever. And it's the worst horrible experience as well, because the problem with Arsenal as well is that they do give you that hope. They do give you that hope. So Arsenal women, don't be like the men's. Don't watch the men's at all. Be yourselves. We know you can do it. Believe in yourself, right? Don't make any TikToks. Don't start talking about anything. Just go and win the game and do us a solid. Thank you, Arsenal women, in advance.
And they absolutely can do it. They beat Chelsea in the League Cup final this year. And Arsenal traditionally are one of the big women's teams as well.
Third,
And they're fighting for their Champions League place. I mean, we've never been in the Champions League before. We're nearly guaranteed. We're actually mathematically not, but it would take Manchester City, I think they have to beat us something like 7-0 on Sunday to get a kind of goal difference.
Don't say
swing.
7-0 to me, Nick.
Let's say, 6-0.
That scoreline has and never will happen to a United team.
Well, that's why I say some people said it's impossible. And I just said, well, I don't want to say it's impossible until we're actually through that game. But yeah, we are playing at home. So, yeah, you would hope we don't have any kind of capitulation like that. So we're virtually sealed. And it would be Man United women's first kind of foray into European football. Yeah. Three teams go in from there. And, yeah, one of the teams will be Arsenal or Manchester City. Looks at the moment like Manchester City, if the results go the way everybody's expecting, will miss out. So, yeah, it would be big for us to pip them to that. But, yeah, big things going on. And I say, whatever happens, it will be the best season ever for Manchester United women. Shame that we couldn't get that bit of silverware to really seal it. But yeah, a lot of experience. Hopefully they can push on from there. It will be a big, big summer. There's big players whose contracts are coming to the end, and we'll have to see what happens with them. Alicia Russo, Mary Earp, Sonia Baggia, big contracts coming up, and we have to see what happens there.
Yeah, you have to hope that getting Champions League football, and, you know, maybe more investment with a new owner, potentially. I mean, we'll have to wait and see, I guess. But it will be interesting to see what the strategy is with that, considering they seem to have won so many of the hearts and minds of United men's fans. So hopefully they ride that wave and they think, right, this is the time for more investment, instead of thinking, well, just do it again, you know what I mean, on the tight budget. Because when the Glazers came in, they folded the women's team. So
Yeah.
Hopefully whoever comes in won't feel the same.
Yeah. And in fact, yeah, it was quite ironic that Avram Glazer showed up at Wembley yesterday for this match. Yeah. No shame whatsoever.
He's like a parasite in its truest sense. He doesn't care about human reaction. He doesn't face him. It's just, oh, terrible, terrible. But yeah, I mean, I liked it at least when United won and the players all got the chance to ignore him. That was quite nice. But yeah, he's parasitic. So I don't think he understands. I think if he saw a baby crying, he wouldn't understand what that was. He just sort of walked past and think that was a weird noise emitted there. He don't care about protests, doesn't care about... You see the clip of him walking off and people are like, when are you going to sell the club? He doesn't even register it. I think he's just interested in the money, and soon he's gone, the better.
Yeah. And I mean, look, maybe that is a good point for us, a quick kind of touch on ownership issues. There still hasn't been any big kind of breakthrough. The papers are constantly coming out with their stories, but I see this a bit like the kind of transfer rumour mill, that one paper is saying Sheikh Jassim is in pole position. Two other papers are breaking that Ineos and Sir Jim Ratcliffe are moving forward. Really, we have no idea what's going on. And it looks pretty clear that neither do the media. You know, everybody's feeding stories from one side or the other. We're still waiting to see what happens. But I don't know. Do you have a kind of preference? These seem to be the two big kind of options for us. Sheikh Jassim, the kind of Qatari bid, or Sir Jim Ratcliffe seems to be the way it's going. I don't know. We've had a kind of couple of debates on this ourselves on this show. I've said myself that the kind of doesn't seem like any great option, unfortunately. We're just looking at a lot of like, what is the lesser of the evils? You know, everybody wants rid of the Glazers, but you know, there's issues with all these bids, whether it's sports washing, whether it's greenwashing, whether it's looking at, you know, conflicts with Nice or what's happening with PSG, human rights issues. There's all sorts going on there. But I mean, I don't know if you have a particular one that you'd prefer to see going forward in these bids.
Yeah, it's not fun choosing which billionaire will own your club, because there's no lovely great billionaires, are there? So yeah, I mean, I'm quite firm on this. I don't want to be owned by a state. I don't want a sort of, especially one, you know, that's obviously human rights abusing. We use it as a sports washing project. I think that is what it's there for. It's there, you know, for any owner of a football club, it's a trophy asset. It's used diplomatically in terms of their own profile. For some, it's, you know, dick waving competition. They just want to be seen to own the biggest, most successful football club. Because I don't want Qatar, it means I want Ratcliffe. That's the option. Because I agree with you. I think there's only two options now. I don't think any sort of Elliott Group and sort of that seems, those rumours seem to have faded. There seems to be a lot less noise around that. So I think, yeah, Ineos and Ratcliffe obviously comes with its own baggage. And I agree with you in terms of the pollution and that the company does. I just think, if you have him, then the soul of Man United retains. And that is what's important to me as a fan, as a season ticket holder. Whereas, as much as it is lovely to envisage this £500 million transfer budget, and Mbappe playing on the left and, you know, Messi playing on the right, and you've got Messi, they give him some 10-year reducer age serum, so he comes back to be prime, whatever it is they have going on. Well, you know, it just doesn't matter to me as much, because it will mean that Manchester United Club is a sports washing project. It's a club that's used politically to gain weight and gain favour for Qatar, with the West. Qatar, a country that obviously has a lot of views in terms of how it's run, I don't agree with. And I wouldn't want it to be owned by any country, really. I wouldn't want Man United to be owned by Britain. I wouldn't want it to be owned by America. I'd rather just have a sort of, a polluting sort of maybe dubious on why I had a Chelsea season ticket and dual ownership. Yeah. Then I would rather that be the case if those are the two options that I have. So I'm quite staunchly in Ratcliffe's favour. And I will say to sort of the anti Ratcliffe people who are like, you know, we want a full sale. I agree with that. I'd rather the Glazers wouldn't be involved. I'm not sure that's going to happen with Ratcliffe, but owning 20% and not having any say over how the club is run, will have to make my peace with that. But then also the ones talking about how Sheikh Jassim is a Man United fan. Has anyone seen Sheikh Jassim? Has anyone seen this person? Has anyone seen a video of him?
Look, he is a very kind of private individual. I have actually seen pictures, apparently, of him at Old Trafford. whether it's
we're talking
or
about
not.
This guy, people are like, he's a Man United fan. Who is he? I love that the best rhetoric is the people who are like, he's a bank manager who also has £6.5 billion to spend.
Well, yeah, I actually had done quite a lot of research to try and find out who these guys are. So Sheikh Jassim, his father was the ex-prime minister of Qatar. Yes. He's been in pretty high up positions in various banks, Credit Suisse. Even at the age of 20-something, he was on the board of like Credit Suisse. He's now part of the Qatar Investment Bank and things like that. And obviously is very involved in financials along the way. I think it's pretty clear that the money must be coming from his father and investments they've made over time as a kind of family office. He himself, he didn't even show up actually at Old Trafford when there was kind of meetings over there, whereas at least Sir Jim Ratcliffe did. Apparently, yeah, we hear he is a Man United fan. I have actually been told, and it was written as well in The Athletic, though, that even going all the way back to as far as like 2010, do you remember we had this kind of, there was the whole green and gold, there was this hope for like a Red Knights kind of fan-friendly takeover. And I have heard as well from a couple of people I know around the club that he was even around at that time. So has actually was involved in talks of being part of the Red Knights group going all the way back to 2010. So I would say that actually they probably he does actually probably have some kind of connection and probably was a fan from back there. He went to school in England. He's kind of educated in the UK. So it's not that surprising, but we don't know that much about him. Obviously, Sir Jim Ratcliffe is a much bigger kind of personality. A lot is known about him, although he also is kind of more on the kind of private side and doesn't make that much kind of comments, apart from when he came out talking about Chelsea and split loyalties and that kind of thing. But we do know that he is a kind of Manchester lad, did support the club when he was younger. The only other question mark, I will say that there has been quite a lot of debate. I mean, this podcast is connected to redcafe.net, where there's lots of chat about this, that whether is this actually a state bid or not? I mean, it could well be. Officially, they say it's not. They say this is private kind of family money and it's not linked to the state. They might want to hide that because otherwise this starts becoming conflicts with the ownership of Paris Saint-Germain. But at the same time, Sir Jim Ratcliffe doesn't seem that worried about conflict with the other clubs he owns. He owns Nice, he owns Lausanne, so they don't seem to be that worried about it. And that's why on each side, like you say, there's question marks everywhere you go through it. I mean, my reason why I start actually, I personally do start going towards saying I prefer the Qatari bid. And the reasons for me are, one, I want to see the Glazers gone completely, and they seem to be the ones who are offering that. I also have not seen much chat from the kind of Ineos side about stadium and facilities, which is like massively important to me, that we should have a lot being invested into the stadium side. I actually don't want a new stadium. I would prefer a kind of refurbishment of Old Trafford because I would like to retain the history and everything there. We're seeing that happening at the Bernabeu, the new camp, are keeping where they are, refurbishing them. That's what I want to see. And you kind of think the Qatar side are saying, look, we've got the money to do all this. You know, you kind of joked about Mbappe, Messi, whatever. I actually don't want to see that at all. That would be a big issue for me, the kind of financial doping. I don't want to be Manchester City. I don't want to be Abramovich's Chelsea, where they're just throwing money at it. And we have spent ridiculous amounts in the transfer market anyway over the past decade. I don't actually see that we need to spend any more money than we already have done. You know, I see some fans saying, oh, yeah, we need this war chest. We need 100 millions here, 100 millions there. I don't actually want to see us spending any more in the transfer market. I just want to see us spend it better. I want to see better kind of football people involved in the club, better decision-making from boardroom level. That's where our issues have been. It's not been a problem of spending on the players. I mean, there has been a problem of spending on infrastructure. But yeah, I'm in kind of two minds about it myself. I kind of slightly go towards the Sheikh Jassim bid for that reasons. But there is a lot of unknowns there. Like you say, who exactly is he? They don't have any kind of track record of owning sports clubs, whereas at least Sir Jim Ratcliffe does have some track record, even if it's a bit dubious and maybe Nice haven't been pulling up trees or anything in France. Whereas, you know, when he took over, he talked about challenging PSG and going to the Champions League, and they're nowhere near that. But yeah, I think we can say there's no great options. But I think we can all agree on the one thing is that we're ready for a change from the Glazers. It's been too long of too many failures. You know, it's a good decade now since Alex Ferguson left. And all right, it hasn't been a complete failure. There's been some trophies along the way, but it's obviously there's been a lot of bad things in the boardroom specifically where it needs a big kind of change.
Oh yeah, they've been awful. They're awful taking money out of the club. So do you think Sheikh Jassim is different to the Qatari government?
I'm not sure of it, but right. Looking at it, I see that the money obviously originally sources from Qatar because his dad was the Prime Minister of Qatar. He was in charge of the Qatar Sovereign Wealth Fund and made a huge amount of money for them. You know, he's known as the man who bought London. They own like half the hotels in London. In fact, they showed, I don't know if you saw one of the tabloids today, was linking this to saying that maybe this is a reason that Qatar are in favour, because Avram Glazer was staying in Claridge's Hotel, which is owned by Sheikh Jassim's family. So they're now linking this to saying, oh, he's staying in the hotel owned by them. Maybe this is a sign that he's talking to them. Of course, it could be a complete coincidence as well. He also did deals in Barclays Bank, Sainsbury's. They own the Shard. These are things he did on behalf of Qatari state. But it's been a good 10 years since he actually left any kind of government position, set up his own family wealth fund, and they've invested in everything from real estate to oil and made a hell of a lot of money from what I understand. I mean, you look at the kind of history of Sheikh Jassim's father in particular, and he's bought, like, paid out money for like the Picassos. He's paid the most money for any. So they obviously as a family have a shitload of money. So, you know, there was question marks over that, saying if the money isn't coming from the state, where is it coming from? And I think it is quite possible that as a family, they can afford this themselves. I still don't know. I still think that at some point, the Emir of Qatar has probably had to tick this off. I don't think it's the kind of place where you can do anything like that without getting some kind of agreement from above. But as I say, we don't know. It's all a bit kind of murky, and that's why things are unclear. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's definitely the state of Qatar. Whereas, for example, there's no argument that Abu Dhabi's Sovereign Wealth Fund bought Manchester City. There's also no argument that the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Newcastle
The Sovereign Wealth Fund of Newcastle. They can't even buy tickets to Saudi Arabia.
The Sovereign Wealth Fund of Saudi Arabia, they own Newcastle United. These things are clear. There's no argument. There's nothing being hidden there. Whereas they're officially saying this is not the Qatar state. This is a private family bid. You know,
Didn't they change the rules after the Saudi Arabians? So then Qatar technically couldn't own Man United.
No, there's actually no rules against a state owning a Premier League football club. Something.
I thought they changed that after Saudi Arabia took over Newcastle.
What actually happened was Newcastle had to give these kind of promises that the state of Saudi Arabia is not making decisions at our club. To be honest, it's an absolute worthless promise. Kind of like, we'll sign this paper. What does it actually mean? It doesn't mean a lot. And in fact, the reason they had to do this was it was actually the state of Qatar that made a big complaint against the Saudi Arabia, because they have a massive argument over Premier League streaming rights in that region. Qatar owned beIN Sports, who stream Premier League football all around the Middle East and before.
Oh, I've seen it for those 3 p.m. kickoffs that I can't go to.
I spent a fair bit of my time working in that kind of Middle East, North Africa region, and do end up watching Richard Keys and Andy Gray. It's like going back to the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
They do all that kind of coverage there. But yeah, they own that. And I mean, this is where geopolitics starts coming into football, basically, where, you know, Saudi and Qatar do not get on. And I'm pretty sure this is also one of the reasons they want to start getting into Premier League football. And so, yeah, where state finishes, where a family who is obviously connected to the state finishes, all kind of a bit murky in a grey area. But yeah, I wouldn't say it is definitely the Qatari state. That was all I say. There's kind of a question mark out there. But yeah, I think ultimately there is still problems about, like you say, human rights. There's all question marks around there. Nothing is clear. Nothing is definite. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. Ultimately, we as fans don't have any say in it anyway. It's obviously the Glazers are going to take whatever's best for them. This is a problem some people have, that they may stay on there on the board and we have to see what capacity. The only thing that worries me is the longer it drags on, the more kind of impact it's going to start having on our summer transfer business. Can people in the boardroom plan? That is the biggest problem. You just want to get something happen, something changing. So otherwise it's going to start affecting next season.
It's not going to happen before June. I'm sorry, did you want to cut there?
Yeah, I was going to say we'll take a quick break over there, come back for the last part of the show. But yeah, we will cover this again and again. You know, there's so much to chat about on the ownership stuff. We keep waiting for some kind of big news before we really go in depth on it, because otherwise it's just speculation. But yeah, it is interesting always looking into it anyway. As I say, we will take the break there and come back for the last part of the show.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we are back for part 3 of the show here. Yeah, as I said, look, an interesting debate there. As I say, I flip-flop myself between which is the best option. There's kind of pluses, minuses. And I said myself on this show as well that it is sad that a lot of our kind of crown jewels of football clubs are going into foreign ownership. I mean, I don't want to start sounding like Brexit FC or something, but it is a shame that football does become this geopolitics, whether it's Russia, China, all getting involved, Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, you know, now Qatar. There isn't that many British owners left in the Premier League. And of course, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, even though he's become a Monaco tax exile or whatever, is still a British owner, born in Manchester. So yeah, it would be nice maybe to see that connection. But yeah, as I said, again, we don't have that much say in it, and we'll have to see what happens as fans. And yeah, we will keep reporting it on from there.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the West Ham away end, and there was a no to Qatar banner in there. But yeah, I haven't seen too many sort of strong fan-led protests either way, apart from the general movement to get rid of the Glazers. So we'll see if that has any effects, but I just don't think the Glazers care. I mean, as you were saying, in terms of getting our transfer strategy together, bless Ten Hag, man. He's had so much to deal with this year, you know, with Ronaldo and Greenwood and now this with Sale that hasn't happened. And then he's trying to plan for next year. I thought it was quite telling that he was making some quotes in his post-match interview with Wolves about how the next owner needs to be ambitious, needs to match the ambition. We need to, you know, start with our transfer plan, we need to get players in, and he's saying we've got a strong squad, but we need to get players in who are up for the fight. So he's obviously trying to tell the owners, like, you have to move this along, but I just don't think they care. The Glazers, they've sucked as much as they can out of Manchester United. The only reason they're getting out is because they feel like it's better for them financially to sell either their majority stake or the whole club entirely, depending on which way the numbers go. And if there's any sort of like, we're doing this because, okay, fine, we've listened to you, I just don't believe that at all. I think they're parasites and can't wait to get rid of them.
Yeah, and I think that is the one thing we can at least all agree on. And yeah, there was this protest before that Aston Villa game, and I thought it was good. You know, it did cause some controversy, this kind of full sale only message. Some people started seeing that as, oh, this is a vote for Qatar. I don't really see that. I see full sale only as just being the pretty similar message to Glazers out. And I thought it was a good protest. All the kind of major fan groups got behind it. And I think that is the best way for everybody to kind of stay together as a fan base. I mean, like I said, I don't like to always see like fallouts and arguments within the fan base. It's always a big kind of issue. And we've had that in the past when the Glazers first showed up. Those, I think the one thing we can agree on, we want to see the Glazers lose power, even if a couple of them do end up staying on. It does seem pretty clear by now that the likes of Avram and Joel Glazer do want to kind of stay on in some capacity, whereas the other four siblings seem ready to cash in and sell out. Yeah. But yeah, even if
the worst haircuts, the worst haircuts in football, those lot. Have you seen them? The sort bald on the top, ponytail at the back. It is. How can you have that much money and have that trim? That's a disgrace. It should be government ordered out for that.
Oh yeah, that is a human rights crime.
That's
right
a human
there.
Human rights crime right there. That is a disgrace that people have to see that. You know what I mean? So we've got to talk about stepping over the line. I will say just on that point, I don't want to talk about the ownership exclusively, but I just will say on that point that you made about not wanting to see loads of money spent, I think there seems to be this argument, and mainly from people online. Obviously, there's a huge sway. The vast majority of Man United fans will not go to Old Trafford and they'll watch most of the games on TV, or that nowadays they'll just see highlights and clips on Twitter and stuff, which is within the right. You're allowed to support the team however you like. But this idea that you have a magic checkbook and that makes you successful and gives you everything you want is not necessarily true. City took a long time to get it right. They're spending a lot of money on rubbish players and they've got everything in place to make them successful. They've got the best coach arguably the world has ever seen. I mean, you can talk about manager in terms of Fergie, but in terms of a coach, in terms of building a team to play this conquering style of football, they're selling players now. It's not even about spending money. They're selling players for profit. They're selling players like Ferran Torres, who played for, what, 1.5 years, even that, for 55 million euros. That's nothing to do with having a magic checkbook. And then you see, on the other side of things, with PSG being owned by Qatar, of course, they've won Ligue 1 countless times in the last 12 years, or however long, 10, 12 years, whatever long they've been owned by Qatar. Have they really looked like a team capable of winning the Champions League? Not really. They got to the final once in COVID time when it was a weird year. You know, they is not necessarily whoever can just spend 500, 600 million a year, you'll definitely get all your dreams achieved. No, it's not. And of course, if you spend generally more money, you're generally likely to be more successful. I'm not going to say you're not. But then look at the teams that have captured the emotions of their fans this year. Arsenal, for however much they've bottled it, as is per their right as Arsenal Football Club, playing quality football, top quality football. And not that's not been through spending 400, 500 million quid on superstars. That's through bleeding through young players. They might experience this season, go on and win more things. I mean, they won't because it's Arsenal, but they might. And then you've got Brighton as well, very well-run club, who are upsetting these elites because they're just playing quality players that they've picked up at great value and they're building a team. They've got an ethos. We need owners who encourage this. Doesn't matter if you're owned by Qatar, who have 3 billion quid every year to give you. If people, as you say, aren't football people making decisions and they're not put in charge to create a winning team, an ethos, a style of play, a way to get players out of the door. I think it's something like we've only made a profit on 3 players in the last 10 years or something like that in terms of selling players.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been awful. Yeah.
And that sort of stuff needs to change. So whoever it is, Ratcliffe, Qataris, you know my thoughts. Hopefully it's not the Qataris. But whoever it is, that stuff is kills you as a fan to see your club being run so poorly when you've got so much quality support from across the world. So I really do hope that changes.
Yeah, I agree with you. That has been our biggest problem, the boardroom. And I know we've seen the back of Ed Woodward, but yeah, how he stayed in the job that long, kind of failing year after year, was crazy. And that is the other thing, that now we have Ten Hag. I think most of our fans are all agreed that he is the man to take us forward. There was actually a vote on Red Cafe in the last couple of weeks when people have started getting worried about top four, saying, if Ten Hag doesn't make top four, should he be fired? And thankfully, I think there was only about 10% of our fans who thought he should be fired. So that kind of gave me a bit more confidence in our fans over there, that they know what they're talking about. So, yeah, I think we're all pretty much united that he is the man to take us forward. But he just needs the right backing. He needs the right board behind him. And, yeah, that is the one to take us forward. Look, we're looking forward at the games coming up now. As you say, Bournemouth is the next one. It is an away game, which is not great for us.
Don't tell me that, Nick. Don't tell me. Can't we just play them all at Old Trafford? Old Trafford and Wembley. Play our away games at Wembley, home games at Old Trafford. Jobs are good.
And then, of course, yeah, we have 2 home games, Chelsea, Fulham, before our FA Cup final against Manchester City. Oh. They look more or less in with the league. We still obviously have hope for Real Madrid stopping them in the Champions League. Otherwise, it is going to be down to us to stop that treble. Unfortunately, it looks like they are going to roll on for 3 Premier Leagues in a row, which, you know, these were the 2 records that we'd hold on to. It was the only silver lining of when Liverpool won that one league was that we kept hold of our 3 Premier Leagues in a row. You know, Alex Ferguson was the only manager who'd done 3 in a row. He was the only manager who'd done the treble. Guardiola is pushing for this again. The odds are against us for that FA Cup final. Actually, higher more in City's favour than even it was for Chelsea in this Women's Cup final. Chelsea were the favourites for that around evens. I saw City are odds on for the Men's Cup final versus us. Like I said, with Varane coming back, Garnacho coming back, hopefully Rashford can have a bit of a rest and just be on full fitness. I will feel a lot more confident. It's a shame we're missing somebody like Martinez, because I think if our first 11 was out, we would have every chance in that game. It's just a bit of our squad doesn't have the strength to step up when we're missing a couple of players. But yeah, if we can get a couple of these back there, we can.
I know who you're talking about there, Nick. Van der Beek, huge miss.
Oh, huge miss.
If he was there, City wouldn't have had a kick.
But yeah, like I say, the main one will be Martinez. Hopefully, if we get Varane back in there, hopefully Rashford is going. We may still obviously lose some players in these last couple of games in the meantime. Gosh. Let's see what happens. There had been as well another vote on Red Cafe lately, and it was, if you had to choose right now, you can only take one. And I'm putting this to you, Ali. Will you pick top four or winning that FA Cup? So taking into account that we may be having to stop Manchester City's treble, but also taking into account that, you know, if you drop out from top four, it's probably going to be Liverpool who are jumping in front of us. So yeah, difficult decision to make. But yeah, if you had to pick one, which way are you going?
It's, I want to ask some context here, Nick.
Go on.
Are City definitely in the Champions League final at this point?
I think, yeah, we're assuming that City are going through in the Champions League.
So they're playing probably Inter Milan. Got have a 48-year-old Dzeko to try and stop them. I would have to say win the FA Cup and drop out of top four. And I've been having this chat with my mates, right? Because this is the question I'll ask you before I start talking. In the periods 2015 to 2020, in that 5-year period, who would you rather have been a supporter of? Manchester United or Tottenham?
Still Manchester United.
Because
we won a few trophies.
Because you won a few trophies. This is the thing, right? I think there's been so much because of the cash flow of the Champions League and because there's so much, you know, competition in the table. The idea of a top four trophy, of top four being this mark of success, I think has been inflated too much. Mm-hmm. You can be in the Europa League. You can be out of the Europa League. Chelsea next year, they've got a huge squad. They're just putting Pochettino. There's no reason why they couldn't finish in the top three next year, right? And pick mm-hmm. on from there. If we go from sixth to fifth over 1 year, having won the FA Cup and the EFL Cup, before you take away City, it being in the final, that's a sign of progress, right? We would have probably accumulated enough points that would normally get a top four space. So it would have been a strange season to have happened. It obviously brutal. Liverpool would hold it over us for ages. But if we are finishing the league with two cups and they're finishing the league holding over us that they've finished fourth, you know, those are the years you remember more. You remember those years that you won. If City win the league and beat Inter Milan 25-0 in the final, and we scumbag a 1-0 win from, you know, a player who was offside, who should have been sent off earlier and was supposed to be injured and all that, and we stop them from winning the treble, it'll be brilliant. It's got to be, you've got to live for these moments, right? That's what football's about. It's about winning at the end of the day. And look, we'll come fifth. We'll push again for next year. It's a shame because obviously Champions League helps you get better players and all that. But I would personally rather stop City winning the treble because that's what history is. You don't. You think back, think of the years we finished second or third under Oli. Whatever, you know, the year we finished fourth under Van Gaal, the year we finished second under Mourinho, whatever, you know what I mean? But you remember those moments, those games where we beat teams in the final under the biggest pressure at the biggest stadiums. And that is what football is about at the end of the day. So it would be really sad to lose out on Champions League, especially to Liverpool. And I get the whole thing of if we get Champions League, then we're progressing. But you can't, there's no hope in that. How many times, Nick, have we sat here under a new manager and gone, right, we've got top four now, that's us, we'll kick on, title challenge next year. It doesn't happen. You can't guarantee it. You can't, if you were to tell me we'll get top four this year, which means we definitely win the league next year, fine, I would take that potentially, but it doesn't guarantee you anything. So reluctantly, I would let Liverpool get fourth just so we can stop City winning the treble, be there, remember that moment, have that highlight in our heads for forevermore, and then crack on again next year and have another go.
Fair enough. And yeah, I do totally get your logic. I mean, I'm going the other way at the moment. Nick, at the moment, redcafe.net.
We're giving a balanced view.
Yeah. At the moment, redcafe.net have voted. 62% have gone for top four. 38% going for that FA Cup win. And yeah, I totally understand it. And I've had to think about it long and hard myself. At the end, first of all, I hate Liverpool much more than I hate Manchester City. I have, unfortunately, more, I would call them friends, let's call them acquaintances, who support Liverpool than I do Manchester City. So I'll never hear the end of it. I do also feel that if we went on to be pipped for this top four, it means we're going to have an awful end to the season. It means we're going to lose probably a couple of these last three matches. And I think that would be more of a downer than losing that FA Cup, because we're kind of almost, we're the underdogs and we're almost like expected to lose it. It will be an absolute killer to lose that history, to lose that record we've kept hold of. As I say, the three in a row one is more or less gone already, and it will be a killer. I do also think that if we go and say that Ten Hag's first season is part of the reasoning for me is that we have already won that League Cup. If we hadn't won that, I'd probably maybe go a bit more towards that FA Cup win to get that trophy. Because we've already won one, I think if we say we won a trophy and get top four, we can say it's a really good season for Ten Hag in his first season. And as you said yourself, you're then in the Champions League, you're then building on it. It's just that hope for going forward. Whereas, you know, the immense disappointment, as I said, I think if we're missing out, it basically means we're going to be losing a couple of these next games. And for me, will be more of a disappointment than losing that cup final, even though I will be there at Wembley for that cup final as well. And I do remember even my biggest disappointment at Wembley for a long time was losing to Manchester City in the FA Cup semi-final, 2011. Even though, yeah, I remember losing to Chelsea in the FA Cup final, but I still remember that loss to City in the semi-final more than losing the cup final to Chelsea that few years later. As I say, I had to think long and hard on it. In the end, I'm probably still going to go for that top four place. But look, hopefully it doesn't come down to that. Hopefully we are going to get top four and we can still do City.
We'll get them both, Nick. Don't worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. We're going for, but as I said,
we've got the positive guys on this week.
Look, I am always the glass full one on this podcast. I was always predicting like the best. Thanks. As I say, we haven't got any of the more negative ones on today. So yeah, look, as far as I'm concerned, it's an interesting debate, but we are going to get top four and we are also going to do City in that cup final. We can do it. We've already beaten them this season. You know, in a one-off game, anything can happen. And they've still got kind of, Champions League to be focusing on. They've still got to finish off that league season. So, and Erik ten Hag, he does have that knack of pulling it out. When he's had to do it, he's pulled out the wins we needed. And I think he will do it again. We've had that depressing debate about the owners. No great option. The depressing debate about top four or FA Cup. But look, we can do both.
Yeah. Let's be real here, right? If the Glazers leave, it is a better picture for next year. The Glazers leave. If we get top four, it's a better picture for next year. If we beat City in the FA Cup final, it's even better. So if we get top four and get rid of the Glazers, as it looks like it's going to happen, it's a very exciting time to be a Man United fan.
I think that is the perfect place to finish this podcast, and I absolutely agree with you. It was great to have you back, Ali. Do check out Ali. It's at Aliwood Gigs. And I know, you've just done a gig tonight at the Comedy Store, right?
Yeah, I was at the Comedy Store with Russell Kane and Joel Dommett doing a charity gig for a charity called Rethink. They do mental health work with people on the verge of suicide. So it's a really good charity, so check them out, Rethink. And you can follow me anywhere, Ali Woods Gigs. I do sketches regularly on Instagram and TikTok. And you can check out my website, aliwoodsgigs.com, to find out where I'm gigging next. So thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on. And hopefully next time I'm on, we're not talking about how we came fifth and lost 5-0 in the final.
Well, listen, Ali, like I said, you've got two caps now. We will definitely get you back for your third cap, either around the end of the season or when the season's over for the Kelly season debrief, for sure. Let's come back and see where we are. And as I say, on this podcast, we're saying we are getting top four. We are also going to win that
top
FA
four.
Cup.
Veghorst,
we don't need to choose.
Final minute header. Don't wait, 121st minute to win 1-0. That's what we're getting at City, at the FA Cup final, baby.
All right. You heard it here first. Get your money on it now.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Cheers. Good night from us. We will see you back on the next one.
Thank you for listening to United Hour. Remember to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at United_Hour. Please take the time to leave a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. United Hour is brought to you by the Sports Social Network, and our theme song is by Ancient Feelings. To get in touch, please email unitedhour@gmail.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.